Welcome to the Toronto Today podcast. My name is Greg Brady, host of Toronto Today. You can hear us on the radio weekday mornings, 5:30 to 9 on 640 Toronto. We put together the best highlights of the day's show on this particular podcast. And on this April 30th, final day of the month, we'll focus in on the Loblaw boycott that's gaining momentum. How much of a dent could this put into Loblaw's profits? It starts tomorrow. Will it change anything or not so much? We'll find out. But let's start first with Think Tank, our daily staple. We air at 7:30 to 8 o'clock, uninterrupted, no commercials. We let you dig right in on all the big topics of the day with panelists. And today, Chloe Brown, a policy analyst, former Toronto mayoral candidate, and Steve Paikin, author and broadcaster, host of The Agenda on TV Ontario. And I want both of you to put me on your collective backs for the next 20 minutes because I set my alarm at 3:45 a.m. and around 2:20 a.m., there's a microwave, pizza pops being microwaved, doors slamming, fridges slamming, and music coming from the kitchen right below me. My 15-year-old son felt like a snack. And I'm going to tell you, Steve, within the letter, like the law and my own code of ethics prevent me from carrying my revenge too far, but I'm considering every option outside of the law and my own code of ethics when I see him next, really.
How do I put this delicately? I'm so glad those years are behind.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. When your teenagers start, they not only start out staying up past you, but after hours after you've fallen asleep, there's a commotion and something that needs to be taken care of.
Hey, you decided to have them. Don't look
at us. Oh my gosh. Yeah. The regrets are heavy on a morning like this. So carry this segment as best you can. Let's start here with the response from, I think locally, because University of Ottawa said something as well. There have been some encampments set up in McGill, on McGill's campus in Montreal, Concordia as well. I want to play you a clip to give you a sense of this. And again, all open for, we've had many a debate about Israel and proportionality of response and what's transpiring in Gaza. No question about it. But I want to play you a student from Austin, Texas, a Texas Longhorn, if you will, a Jewish student documenting what his day was like yesterday.
I'm trying to scare Jews off campus. I'm trying to do my final, and in the background I hear they're chanting for the death of Israel, the death of Jews. It's completely unacceptable. If they want peace, they don't stand for anything like it. You know, Israel is a democratic state. It's the only democracy in the Middle East. This is, at the end of the day, they don't want Jews on campus. They're trying to scare us off. They don't want us here.
Are you going to be scared off?
No, absolutely not. We will not follow our history. We will not be led like lambs to the slaughter.
What are your parents telling you? Finals are coming up next week. What are your parents telling you? Do you want to come back?
They're telling us to stay away, at least mine. And in my opinion, I'm going right into it. This is not a time. We have to be strong. History shows us that if we're strong, we can defend ourselves.
Just incredible. Incredible scenes that we're seeing, Steve, on U.S. campuses everywhere. Maybe we didn't see them didn't think we'd see them in our lifetime, but I want to know what your thought is. Again, the many of the calls about universities cutting financial ties with Israel, maybe there's conversations to have. We've talked about businesses. We've talked about corporations. We've talked about weapons. But when I hear that kid, I think he is collateral damage in a scenario that he can do nothing about, and it impacts him. It's going to impact him the rest of his life, and a lot of these kids that are being chastised for just being Jewish on these campuses.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons this story is so intriguing to so many people is that there are so many competing interests and values here, all of which are really quite legitimate. On the one hand, universities are technically private property, and therefore they're allowed to have a say, the administrations are, in what happens on that private property. And if they don't want tent encampments and these kinds of demonstrations, they're allowed to do that. On the other hand, there is a longstanding tradition going back, obviously, multiple decades of university campuses being not just where free speech is acceptable, but are hotbeds of free speech. This is where some of the most dramatic discussions, demonstrations, and so on are not only allowed to take place, but encouraged to take place. This is where people really start to get their understanding of issues, sometimes for the first time in their lives. So with all of that at play, there is also the case, as this Texas student demonstrated, that nobody should be, quote unquote, told to go back to Poland, which, you know, we hear shouted at Jewish students. There should not be calls for, genocide to Israel. These things should not happen. And then there is also the double standard that often happens. For some reason, members of the Jewish community all over the world, and but particularly we're seeing this now on our campuses, they're somehow Jewish students being held responsible for the actions of an Israeli government that I would suggest increasing numbers of members of the Jewish community feel offside from.
Yeah.
And yet somehow they're expected to carry the can for that. We don't, I don't see protests on the Danforth when the government of Greece does something that the Greek community here doesn't like. The Greek community is not expected to carry the can for that. And yet Jews are expected somehow to defend and be associated with everything that is done by the Netanyahu government. These are all of the different factors at play here, which make this just an incredibly complicated and fascinating story.
Chloe, I think Steve has it. If you look back in history, I'm convinced student protests in the early 70s, if not slowed down, stopped the Vietnam War from going further than it went, further than invading Cambodia. That gets into the history books. But Steve's right. Campuses have been, and I hope they continue to be, a hotbed of activism and protest. But I worry there isn't measure here. I worry that some things have gone far too far from what I've seen in the States. What are you seeing with your own eyes?
From the Canadian side, I'm seeing that there is a lot more education being done in the quiet than there is being done out loud on campuses. And maybe that's because the semester has ended and we've already dealt with a lot of things on our side. But honestly, I'm hopeful because honestly, character is made in times of adversity. And we're seeing that there is an opportunity here to look at Jewishness not as a monolith, but there are more sides to being Jewish than just being like practicing Judaism. There is Ashkenazi, there's Mizrahi, there's the Hasidic Jews, there's Zionist, and there's a moment now to get clear on what it is that we as a global community can and cannot support. And I'm seeing a lot of young people have the moral character to reject genocide at all fronts. And honestly, I'm more hopeful for that than the occasional disagreement and violent protest that is happening, because after this, we still have to live amongst each other and we need to be able to get to the right agreement on how we contextualize situations like this, because it's a lot of shades of gray. And ultimately, we're talking about political powers that do have influences on our government. We're seeing CEJA lobby our government and send politicians to Israel. That is a very political act. And a lot of us as young people who put our tax dollars into this government want a greater say about our foreign relations and our complicitness in creating genocide across the world.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there. But I go back to the kid, Chloe. I mean, what are his rights to be on campus, not be stopped from entering certain areas? And what are his rights to write an exam?
He's doing it. He's on the campus. And as he said in his statement, he's there and he's going to continue going there because of his personal beliefs. My wish for him is that no violence comes upon him. But at a certain point, we have to talk about North America's patronage to the state of Israel and how that has manifested into the Netanyahu government, creating an extreme genocide against the Palestinian people. And even after Netanyahu, we have a responsibility as North Americans invested in the military-industrial complex to withdraw our support and not cooperate in violence. And that's our responsibility as millennials and Gen Z of a global community. So my hat's off to the young people who are trying their best to maintain peaceful protests. And I condemn those who are calling for violence against people who are just trying to find their way through this fog.
I'm going to come back to Steve in a second, but I'm going to mention a country like China and their repression and indisputable genocide against the Uyghurs. If we saw a video of a Chinese student being screamed at, being threatened, being persecuted on a campus in Canada, we know what the reaction would be. If we did it for another country in the Middle East and it was about women's rights or gay rights, we know what the reaction would be. Can we agree? There's a standard I think we're holding Jews in Israel to, and you've got your opinion and I've got mine, that we're not holding other countries and other cultures to, because we wouldn't, Chloe, be allowed to. It wouldn't be in the code.
I would argue, as a person from the Black community that tried to talk about the need for social services instead of policing, that I've been on the end of that type of vicious disagreement as well. People have accused me of wanting anarchy when I just want safety.
Yeah.
Ultimately, this is the reason why we have to struggle through democracy. That is the occupational hazard of participating in this governance system. You have a plurality of different opinions. We can come to a common ground if we are focused on getting there.
Steve, can we get there? Can we find that plurality? Again, a lot of the politics and a lot of the hopes for foreign policy and a lot of the hopes for perhaps even what Israel become with the next leader and the next chapter, we might all be on the same page on, but it feels like we're a lot more ripped apart than we were 6 months ago even.
For sure. You've asked the question, can we get there? Yeah, we can get there. Can we get there right now? No, we can't get there right now because there's simply too much disagreement. In two ways, Greg, let me put it this way. Mm. What's happening right now in Gaza is outrageous to many, many Canadians. What happened on October 7th of last year is also outrageous to too many Canadians. And then again, not outrageous enough to a bunch of other Canadians. So, you know, there's too much anger. There's not enough communication. There's too many people trying to make a point as opposed to listening to what the other side has to say. And those are not the conditions under which greater understanding takes place. So I don't know how we get there. We got to get there at some point. You know, it's funny. We've often talked to, you know, the three of us about how sometimes Middle Eastern politics is appropriate to bring into local Canadian politics, and sometimes it isn't. But Doug Ford, the premier, said something yesterday when he was asked about this. And you know, in his own, you know, I don't want to criticize him for saying this because at the end of the day, what he's saying makes sense, although it does feel a little naive at the moment, which is he just wants everybody to get along. And ultimately, at the end of the day, that is what has to happen if we're going to survive as communities. We just have to figure out a way to get along. It's not possible right now, Greg, but somehow we got to get there.
Yeah. And civility in those disagreements. We do not have to see things the same way, but there's sort of those boundaries and parameters that are tricky. I want to move it to cell phones, vape detectors, all this stuff that we're expecting in the public school system next year. And it's quite obvious to the listener, and we know this too, Steve and I do, that Chloe was in the public school system far more recently than either Steve or myself. So
yes,
growing up more in a cell phone era and maybe even a vaping era. There's a lot of people that feel a little bit of a authoritarian creep with this, Chloe, but I've talked to enough teachers that say, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to confiscate cell phones. I want the full focus in my classroom, but I need backing. I need the principal and vice principal to back me. I need the superintendents and the directors of education to back them. And I need the school boards to almost clear the room and let us do our jobs here. How do you view what could happen here in the fall?
I find this to be such a strange initiative because they're putting audio detecting devices in bathrooms. And traditionally, those are private spaces, and there are a lot of noises that happen in the bathroom that could be detected as something different. But ultimately, when it comes to cell phones, I think there is an onus on the parents to just not buy cell phones. They can buy dumb phones, not smartphones. There's a lot more things that the parents and the teachers could be doing together as opposed to letting the state dictate how kids learn. And ultimately, the state's responsibility should be better investments in school, because as a young person with a cell phone, I wasn't on it when I was in extracurricular tutoring, when I was doing other things that engaged my attention. Right now, we have one of the most underfunded school systems at the TDSB and Peel level. And I honestly hope that the government starts thinking about how do I re-engage young people in learning so that they're not seeking distractions.
Steve, can this work? I know you've had several shows on the topic, given that it's funny. I dug out Josh Madlow retweeted a TDSB cell phone ban that goes back to 2007. And I'm thinking, to Chloe's point, the phones were a lot dumber and a lot less smarter than they are now back in 2007, and they still didn't want them in the classroom back then.
Yeah, well, I suspect you and I had to go through the same thing on this one, having had kids, which is to say, when they come to you and they hire a mixture of Hill and Knowlton and every other lobbyist imaginable out there in order to get cell phones, smartphones, not dumb phones, but smart, you've got to be a pretty strong parent to be able to say, on the one hand, I want my kid to be safe, so I want them to have a phone. But on the other hand, I don't want them to have, you know, the latest rose-colored iPhone 24,000, whatever, whatever. You have to show a lot of strength as a parent to be able to shut that down. I don't know, everybody I've talked to, everybody, including a lot of kids, say that this ban in the classroom makes a lot of sense because we're well past the point where cell phones are being used only for educational purposes in class. We know they're designed to make kids dumber because they absolutely encourage all the wrong reactions with dopamine hits and so on and so forth. As for the vaping in the bathrooms, you know, I guess one of the reasons we're so fascinated by this story is that, once again, we have a clash of values and rights here. On the one hand, we want kids to be safe when they're going to the bathroom. On the other hand, you know, they have some privacy issues as well that we have to deal with. Chloe is right about various noises coming out of the bathrooms that we don't necessarily need to hear. But you know, it wasn't that long ago that one of my kids was in high school, and I did get the reports back at the end of the day about way more bad things happening in bathrooms than way more necessary good things happening. And therefore, I think I can completely understand this policy.
Yeah. There, but for the grace of God, go us to the bathroom. Chloe, it's tricky, right? Because I'd like to think that all that audio, surveillance audio, would only be used when there's been a documented incident or reported incident. I'd like to believe that. And yet at the same time, it'll just take one rogue moment, to be honest, one pervert, one this, one that, and it'll blow the whole idea up. And then people will say, oh, that could happen there. Well, I don't want it at my kid's school anymore, period.
Absolutely. And this is a moment for the schools, the parents, and the students to come together and create a strategy, because ultimately the kids want to be in school. They want mm-hmm. to be learning, but you can't continue to treat them like potential criminals. Ultimately, these kids are vaping and they're on their phones because there is underfunding there. Where there used to be shop class, home ec, the Ontario Youth Apprenticeship Program, these things are not being funded to engage them. And ultimately that falls on the government.
Steve, I know how teachers used to hate having yard duty in elementary school. I think having bathroom duty might be the worst of the, you know, you just get done a Civil War class. And then next thing you know, you're on. Maybe you can hand out mints, though. There are some nice touches we don't have in the public stream these days that we could work on.
Look at you, all of you exploring different policy options. I'm deeply impressed.
Mints, cologne. Listen, there's all sorts of options that we didn't expect in bathrooms 10 years ago. So let's take it 10 years forward and see what else we can come up with. Let me get to Loblaws. Boy, you say it, and I think instantly people on the radio shiver, and they can picture Galen Weston, you know, like a modern day Montgomery Burns, although younger and probably more attractive, just sitting on those billions of dollars, Chloe. Loblaws is facing a boycott. There's a Reddit group that's got 56,000 members, and they're trying to spread this far and wide. Now, some people say, good luck, all the best. It's probably not going to change. This isn't like an airline or a car dealership. People still need to eat. But could, you know, and we talked about this before, could enough people get together and challenge the cause here of Loblaws continuing to make money? Could enough people stop shopping at the Loblaws grocery stores to make a difference for a month?
Absolutely. And this is the type of team sports that I like. Ultimately, we as consumers need to exercise some discipline in terms of our economic tactics in democracy. And a boycott is the best way to do it. If you want to support your local bakery, your local cheesemonger or fishmonger, now is the time. And I think this would be a great opportunity for small and medium-sized businesses that are not Loblaws. This is probably the most exciting thing to happen. And I hope that I can really discipline myself not to support Loblaws, because there are a bunch of independent grocers and food providers that I could be supporting, but I need to commit to them. So yeah, wish me luck.
Now, remember, there's Zayre's. That's a problem. You can't go to Zayre's or Value Mart or No Frills. You got to remember those three specifically. Go ahead. Money goes right to the same person and people.
Not going to Shoppers either. Like, I got to find my pharmaceuticals elsewhere, but you know, got to exercise some discipline and put myself on a diet.
Steve, what do you think? I think for essential services, it's really tough. And I'll bring up sport. It's really easy to say, hey, the Leafs lose tonight, let's boycott. Well, guess what? If you don't buy the tickets, there's a finite amount. They only need to sell 18,000 at, you know, $800 a seat for a playoff game. But whatever. If you drop your tickets, someone else will pick them up. This isn't like that because it's food. It's a basic necessity. It's not an extracurricular, and it's not a secondary spending need. It's a primary spending need.
Yeah, and I think actually you made a great point just a second ago about the notion of competition. That's really where it's at here. You may, you know, citizens are allowed to rise up and organize in order to take on some issue that they don't like, and they appear to be doing that by the tens of thousands on this particular situation. But it's not just Loblaws, as you pointed out. They have other stores in the marketplace as well. They have an extremely dominant position in the marketplace, and if there are inadequate alternatives to that, one does wonder how far this campaign can go. So you've got, you know, John Turner, the former prime minister, used to say, democracy doesn't happen by accident. You've got to participate. So if people are serious about this, they've got to do their research and participate.
And Steve, I know it feels like, I'll go back again to an era where pre-cell phone, we had a landline and we had Bell Canada and no other option. If you didn't like the service, you didn't have a phone. We usually had one cable company, same way. And we look at all this competition in the States, whether it's for wireless, whether it's for grocery stores, the idea of a Trader Joe's, like we just don't seem to be creative or inventive. And we seem to limit the competition to a few of the big boys and girls.
That is inevitably the way it is. Well, I shouldn't say inevitably. That certainly has been the way it has been in Canada. We are more concerned about having big, dominant players in our marketplace because we're a smaller population. And for whatever reason, those companies, be it cell phones, be it grocery stores, have managed to convince the Competition Bureau and governments that that's a good way to go, that we're not a big enough population to withstand more and more competition. But that argument does seem to fall on... It at the end of the day, Greg, that argument really doesn't make a lot of sense a lot of the time, does it?
All right. Well, Chloe, a reminder, it's a 31-day month, not a 30-day month. We're going to check in on your progress next. You can look for Chloe Brown at a Sobeys or a Rexall near you.
I'll be uploading my receipts to the internet.
Yes, solid choice to do that. That's right. Fraud's not a constant on the internet either, so I think you're pretty safe. Loved having you both on, as always. Thanks for the time.
Cheers.
Good stuff. Thanks, Greg. Bye, Chloe.
That was Think Tank, which airs every weekday, 7:35, goes right to 8 o'clock. Our next guest... younger than your usual guest. I think that's fair to say. He's in 10th grade. And it's not one of those Billy Madison scenarios. This is Hayden Lai, an incoming student trustee with the York Region District School Board. And we get his thoughts on discipline in schools, Ontario's crackdown on cell phone usage, and vaping as well in school bathrooms. He's got some excellent insight here. So here we go.
On a night cold enough to freeze your bones, a prospector searching for a legendary cursed gold mine vanishes without a trace. I'm Crew Williams, the host of Dead Man's Curse. This season, we retrace the steps of fortune seekers looking for a mother lode worth billions who never came back. Join our quest June 3rd. Search for and follow Dead Man's Curse Volcanic Gold on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
So what about this policy with phones? What do you spot? And you would have come from kind of the generation that kind of got cracked pretty hard with schooling at home and COVID restrictions and whatnot. Did you see a change, Hayden, after the pandemic when you came back to school in person? Were phones more present and more being used by your classmates?
Well, yeah, I think so, definitely. When I was in school during the pandemic, it was during elementary school. So, yes, there was less use. Before the pandemic, but now I see a lot of reliance on it, right? I see, if I sit in the back of the classroom, I see a lot of students on their phones playing video games or not paying attention to the teacher. And the teacher will spend a lot of time on reprimanding students for being on their phones, which I think takes away from important class learning.
Well, it does. Are you hopeful that this turns around a little bit? Are most of you and your friends talking about this, saying there's a bit, this is going to be a lot stricter and nobody wants to be embarrassed. Nobody wants to have their phone taken away. Nobody wants to get sent to the principal's office. Are people worried about that?
Well, yes, I think people are worried about that. And to a certain extent, I do think that this will be very effective because students are afraid that that their phones are going to be taken away. And I do know that in my classroom, this was a big discussion from the teachers. So I do know that students are learning about this and are going to have to adapt to this, which I think will be really good for in-class learning.
How often during a class, Hayden, you'd be the eyes and ears because we trust you because you're there every day. How often does the teacher say, I want you to look something up on your phone? as in how often is a student's cell phone utilized for the very things that people say, well, we need them out because we need to Google stuff, or he asks us to look up a historical figure or a fact. How often does that happen in class?
Well, I mean, I think that happens occasionally. I wouldn't say it happens too often, but I mean, we're still allowed to use our laptops and our personal computers, which I think will be which will help with that issue, because we can still search up about those historical figures on our laptops instead of having to use our phones, because there are those major gaps with students being on video games on their phones, and it's much easier to catch a student when they're on their laptop. So I think that there are still ways that we can improve learning because we can still have access to our computers.
Hayden Lizer, our guest, he's an incoming student trustee headed towards grade 11, York Regional District School Board. Tell me about vaping. How big a problem is this? How many kids do it? Now I'm a parent of a grade 10 your age, and I'm pretty confident that it doesn't happen with him and it doesn't happen with a lot of his friends. But I'm guessing you see it and know about it.
I see it all the time.
Really?
Whenever I go into the washroom, I can either smell a fruity smell, or I can see someone that's vaping. It's just really, really bad. And not only is it bad for the students who do it, but it makes the students who go into the washroom very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it makes going to school an uncomfortable experience, which I think it's not very good. You know, every month or so as student trustee, we collect about a few representatives from each school. And I learned about this story about a girl who does athletics, and and the story about her is that she's addicted to vaping, and she's just trying to quit until she can run up the stairs because it's hurting her health so much. But she can't stop because she's so addicted. So, you know, I think that a lot of these students are actively seeking out help, but it's very difficult to do so. So I think that these the new funding that Minister Lecce added is going to be very helpful.
That's so interesting you say that about that with the addiction, because I don't know how much education there is, and I don't know how much there can be in school. The school day is only so finite, so we always say, well, we want more reading, we want more math, and we want more phys ed. It's tough, isn't it, to deal with the issues of addiction, whether it's marijuana, whether it's vaping, right?
Definitely, but I also think that the really specific thing that I really like about this policy, so as an example, yeah, at Huron Heights Secondary School, what they've been doing to stop vaping is by patrolling teachers around the washrooms. But there are a few issues with this, because you need a lot of teachers, and it's also very expensive. And it also makes students very uncomfortable to go to the washroom. But what I really like about the vaping detectors is that it strikes a perfect balance, and it also tells students that this is not okay. Because for myself, in the beginning, when I was first in grade 9, you know, vaping was something that seemed very irregular.
Yeah.
I wasn't really desensitized to it yet. But after seeing so many students doing it, people close to me doing it, I've sort of been desensitized to it. And I think that when students are actively not being prevented from vaping in the washrooms, there's a really big problem, and we get desensitized to it.
I think so. Hey, Hayden, let's have a chat in a couple months as the school year wraps up. I really appreciate you coming on this morning.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks to Hayden Lai for joining us. Now, big topic, car theft. And all the way to the Prime Minister's office yesterday went Brampton Mayor Patrick Brown, trucked it up to Ottawa to talk about car thefts and doing more. Justin Trudeau met with Mayor Brown regarding auto theft in Ontario and the need for federal intervention. Here's that conversation.
Yeah, you know, I've been very critical of the federal government when it comes to auto theft and how it's related to break and enter, and of course how this is a gift to organized crime. We're looking at potentially $2 billion in auto thefts last year, which is going directly to organized crime, funding some of the most heinous criminal activity in our country. You know, but you can't just criticize, you have to come up with solutions. So my request of the federal government was, let's sit down and talk about how we can solve this. I'll work with anyone to make life safer in Brampton and the GTA. And they took up my offer and said, you know, come and visit us and go over ideas. And so I did. You know, my pitch in Ottawa with the Minister of Justice, the Minister of Public Safety, and the Prime Minister himself was, if you install scanners in the Port of Montreal, if you put scanners in the intermodal hubs in Brampton and Vaughan, it will change the game. Instead of it being high reward, low risk, it will make it high risk for organized crime to smuggle criminal goods. I also pitched them on having a higher threshold for property crimes when it comes to bail. A lot of these kids stealing cars are let out almost immediately, and we need to change that. even frankly, if you look at the gold heist we had a few weeks ago, where everyone was arrested in the largest gold heist in Canadian history, the police did a marvelous job, you know, getting those responsible. But everyone was let out on bail.
You saw the guy was at the gym the next day, getting a sweat on.
The reason being, they're property crimes. Even $20 million of gold is property crimes. We don't have a high threshold in Canada when it comes to holding someone in custody for property crimes, no matter the severity. And so I was asking the government raise the threshold for serious property crimes, especially as how they intersect with other crimes. You know, in the gold heist, it was funding guns. In the case of car thefts, it's also funding guns and drugs. Yeah. The last thing I pushed them on, and they were very open to this, which is encouraging, was I want them to deputize local police to have jurisdiction at the intermodal hubs and the ports. This is what our police have been asking for. It doesn't cost the government of Canada anything. And literally, I said to the Prime Minister and the Public Safety, I've got an idea here that's not going to cost you a penny. And right now, if a Toronto police officer, a Peel police officer, a York police officer is tracking an auto theft ring and it takes them to the intermodal hub, which is where they go, it takes them to the Port of Montreal, they're not allowed to enter without a warrant. By the time they get a warrant, the stolen goods are long gone. And so we need to change this. We need to deputize them to have give them the legal right to continue the pursuit of their investigation. And so, I am encouraged in the sense that they weren't saying no. They were saying yes to all of this. I think we're going to get some good news on a few of these topics in the weeks and months to come. But for me, it just goes back to the urgency. You know, every week that we allow auto theft to surge in our country, we are allowing organized crime to become more profitable.
Yeah. Once you succeed at something, if you're on the wrong side of it, you might keep going back to the same well over and over again. And there's not much. Yeah, there just isn't much deterrent right now in terms of police response, no fault of their own, or in terms of incentive. I want to ask you about this Vaughan Intermodal Terminal. And I think it's significant because most people think, Patrick, as you know, that if iCar goes missing, it's going to be at the Port of Montreal by sunset the next night. But this place here has 500,000 containers, 550 acres, and some of these cars are ending up in Vaughan before they go overseas as opposed to Montreal.
Yeah, there's two major intermodal hubs, rail lines that go directly to the Port of Montreal. There's one in Brampton run by CN, and there's one in Vaughan run by CP. And what's happening is you see organized crime putting them into shipping containers because they know this is a blind spot. They know that police don't have jurisdiction here. And so, you know, never underestimate how sophisticated or organized crime is. If there's loopholes in the criminal code, if there's loopholes in jurisdiction, they will drive a truck through that loophole. And in this case, literally tens of thousands of stolen cars. And so they're taking advantage of it. And you know, I have constituents who tell me, I can see my tracking device. I can see my, you know, my
and it's
my
still AirPods. In the GTA, right?
And it's at the intermodal hub and the police can't enter.
Yeah.
So we got to fix this.
This $3.5 million for four scanners, Port of Montreal, one each in Brampton and the CP terminal in Vaughan. Again, I mean, I'll be the one to say it. The federal government has that money and I cannot believe you'd be saving the insurance industry and consumers so much more than $3.5 million. So you're hoping for good news on the scanners and soon, it sounds like.
Yeah, they were saying yes. You know, they've had some pushback, obviously, with CBSA and the port and in some cases even the rail lines. But, you know, I'm convinced this is going to get done. And if it doesn't get done, I'm going to keep on frustrating them by talking about it on radio and TV. Sometimes the squeaky wheel gets attention and I'm not going to let up about auto thefts because I know it's terrorizing our residents.
You mentioned we brought up Mayor Chow. We brought up some of the other mayors. Are you getting proper responses from them as well? I'm telling you, I don't think anybody's been out there as much. And I can tell you 416/Toronto residents are appreciative of how outspoken you've been and how critical you've been. You've made this a priority. What are you hearing from some of the other mayors? And to be honest, do they need to become as vocal as you are?
Well, first of all, I want to thank the chiefs of police and the police association. They've been the ones who've been sort of sounding the alarm bells on this first. And you know, they're on the front lines. That's why I really think we need to take their call seriously. In terms of other mayors, I can tell you that Mayor Del Duca in Vaughan immediately reached out and said, how can I help? Mayor Chow in Toronto said, if you go to the Port of Montreal again, she'd be interested in coming and doing a tour. So, you know, I think the more voices we have, the more powerful our argument is going to be. And so, you know, I am getting the support from other mayors, and you know, we're not going to let up on this.
I bring it up because it just doesn't feel like this is something about ideology or parties or political lines. Again, municipal politics frees people of some of that, but it's hard to believe that no matter what people might disagree on, even if they disagree maybe even on sentencing and bail, Patrick, the idea of having the technology there to prevent criminals from doing this over and over again and increasing numbers, I feel like that crosses any kind of political distinctions.
Absolutely agree, and I think that's part of the beauty of municipal public service, is that you're not, there's no barriers when it comes to a partisanship, that you can just embrace good ideas no matter where they come from. And so, yeah, we are having a lot of collaboration on this. I got this motion and advocacy through our Big City Mayor's Caucus unanimously. So there's been no pushback, only offers of help. We just need to make sure it gets executed, not just talked about in Ottawa.
We'll watch for that good news. Patrick, thanks so much for the time this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Today podcast. We drop the highlights of today's show every weekday morning around 11 a.m., so you can consume them all right here. Don't forget, the whole show airs 5:30 to 9 on the air on 640 Toronto. Weekdays, you can stream us as well at 640toronto.com or ask your smart speaker to play us as well. If Alexa or Google are in the mix, you can ask them and they'll find you exactly where we are, and you'll get the where, when, and why of all the big issues of the day. Have a great day.